to Vegan Nation.
And these are the words. May all beings be free from slavery.
We're listening to Mobius Loop, a vegan band in London. They are performing September 6, 2025, at the Animal Rights March in London.
We want you to sing the next time it comes around if we all sing it together. All right, let's try it.
May all beings be.
May all beings be. Open and empty, may your beings be. That's right, sing it loud, doggy.
Vegan Nation is an informational program featuring vegan music, news, events, and interviews about the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide, manifesting a paradigm of freedom, liberation, peace, justice, and sustainability. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. Vegan Nation has been on air since January 2015. Much thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. Kickoff to World Vegan Month, November. November 1st starts World Vegan Month. I have a special guest who's joining us for an interview, Shelley Harrison. He is the primary author and editor of the Abolition Amendment, a proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Upon ratification, it abolishes all animal exploitation industries and practices. It grants legal personhood to animals and abolishes the slavery of all animals. Milestone in human evolution to the 19th Amendment in the USA, the 19th Amendment that granted women the constitutionally protected right to vote. The start of the women's rights movement. Prior to that, in 1848, was the Seneca Falls Convention, where women and men met to establish the Declaration of Sentiments and Grievances.
One more time!
Shelley has a vast experience with this, and we'll hear some of the important aspects. Thank you all for tuning in. We're listening to Mobius Loop, a vegan band in London. 2025 at the Animal Rights March in London.
Massive love and respect to everyone here being a voice for animals.
Welcome, Shelley. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene. So glad to get to talk to you today.
Well, I'm thrilled with this and all the work that you have done for decades for animal liberation and veganism. Thank you.
Well, I'm grateful for you as well and all the decades of work you've been doing. So thank you for saying that.
Shelley, before we begin with our interview today, will you please share with our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay. My professional career has been split basically between teaching and working as an inventor. So on the teaching front, I have taught law for about 20 years and been teaching at the university level for about 20 or 30 something years. And then on the inventing side, I've worked in a number of different technical fields, sold or licensed inventions to a number of large companies. Primarily today, I work as an activist, animal rights activist, and equal rights and social justice and environmental related matters. As a educational background, I went to Stanford as an undergraduate and studied English there, and then went to University of Virginia for law school. Been vegan for coming up on 20 years now.
For our listeners, I'd like to relay the information that interviews about Shelley's inventions and also very detailed information about the Abolition Amendment are in the Vegan Nation Archives, his interview starting in 2016. So interested folk can hear that at vegansradio.com. Thank you, Shelley. Veganism has a focus and a scope. And so the scope of veganism is the non-exploitation of all sentient life. The animals is one focus, but the scope of veganism is liberation and freedom and justice for all sentient life, which includes humans and our fellow animals. Speaking of that, I'd like to share, I know this is one of my favorite quotes, and I think it's one of your favorite quotes too. Quote, "Our task must be to free ourselves by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature and its beauty," from Albert Einstein.
For sure. Just a wonderful quote.
We know that veganism has been in existence, in my opinion, since the Garden of Eden, and that we will return to a world of nonviolence, such as that is well known in some of the prophecies, such as the lion lays down with the lamb and the wolf is at peace with the calf, where even the predators aren't attacking others, and everybody's practicing the golden rule. In specificity to humankind, I would love to hear of the Abolition Amendment, of you being the primary author and editor of the Abolition Amendment. Could you please explain that to our listeners?
Well, the Abolition Amendment, of course, is a proposed constitutional amendment that will abolish slavery here in the U.S. for all species, not just for humans. It's modeled on the 13th Amendment, which is what is the amendment that ended human slavery. And so we repurposed that language to extend it beyond the species barrier. And we also included in the text a number of kind of procedural mechanisms to make that happen, since we're doing it for other species who are not able to directly represent themselves in court and so on. The Abolition Amendment needed to include procedural vehicles that were, you know, unique to a situation like that. So it goes into more detail than the 13th Amendment needed to do. Although, of course, the 13th Amendment itself wound up being followed up by the 14th and 15th Amendments, which did provide additional procedural mechanisms and so on for enforcing the kind of ending of slavery and making it real. And so we kind of learned from the Civil War Amendments 13, 14, and 15 and kind of packaged those all into one with respect to the modern Abolition Amendment. And we came out in 2015, so it's coming out. We're coming up on the 10th anniversary here of the first draft of the Abolition Amendment going public. We launched that on Abolition Day, which is December 6th of 2015, to open up a one-year public comment period. And I think the Abolition Amendment went through about five different iterations, each one being successively an improvement on the last, through the benefit of this public comment period that we had going for a full year there. And so I do think that building political consensus around an idea is very important. It's something that we can learn both from of women's rights and other movements as well, and apply to modern situations. The 19th Amendment was apex legislation, meaning it passed at the highest level of the given jurisdiction, the U.S. Constitution. And we're doing that same thing with the Abolition Amendment, building that kind of political support, broad base of political support, and providing a piece of apex legislation that can get the job done for the entire country. So that is a lesson, for instance, that we did glean from history, both of the women's rights movement and also the proto-abolitionist movement to end human slavery.
Can you please explain how that can be used by all political parties?
Yes. So the Humane Party took on the task by necessity, since no one else was going to do it. We took on the task of actually creating a sort of complete and ultimate solution for animal rights here in the United States. It just hadn't been done before. And we felt like, as the Humane Party and essentially serving as the leader of the animal rights movement here in the U.S., that it was incumbent upon us to do that. But once that job is done, once that draft has been created and published in final form, which it has, anyone of any background can and should support the Abolition Amendment. So it's definitely not a partisan endeavor. Yes, one entity had to create it, but now that that is done, all Americans of any political background, they can support that, the Abolition Amendment, from wherever they are in the process of freeing the animals.
Can you please explain how it eliminates the exploitation of animals and maybe give some examples?
Well, first off, the first section actually just says that the practice of slavery and involuntary servitude, it forbids those with respect to animals. And so just as using the exact same language that was used for the 13th Amendment to end human slavery, to make it very clear that we're doing the same thing with respect to other species. At the time that that is finally done, once the Abolition Amendment is ratified, then that will put an immediate end to, you know, for example, all the animal exploitation industries, in the same way that the 13th Amendment ended human exploitation, at least at the slavery level. Obviously, exploitation is still happening, and we've had to perfect that victory all the way until the present day, and that's going to also be true for other species. But it will, at a broad and single stroke, end, for instance, the meat, the dairy, the leather, the fur, the egg industries, poultry, and then violent so-called entertainment, such as rodeos and other spectacles, you know, horse racing, that kind of thing. All those things will be ended, at least in the public sphere, at a stroke. Now, will those things still happen in the criminal underworld? Yes, they will still be going on. And so there will be years and decades of enforcement mechanisms that have to be built after that time. But with respect to the kind of public allowing of those kinds of activities and the legality of those kinds of activities, that will all end at that very moment that the Abolition Amendment is finally ratified.
Thank you. And of course, the animals enslaved in the vivisection industry, and of course, all the breeding of animals of the different species, the buying and selling, all that will be eliminated.
Yes.
I often will listen to podcasts and presentations of philosophies that I don't agree with, but again, the idea of being open to hearing all information. So when I hear those who follow a type of anarchist philosophy, so they say no master, no slave, yet they maintain their right to enslave those who don't look like them as human.
Yeah, that same contradiction is apparent in a number of other political movements. We probably won't have time to talk about it today, but of course, it's always hilarious to hear someone declare themselves, you know, a libertarian or a green thinker or whatever, and yet still are exploiting animals. Making that connection is a difficult thing for most people to do, but yes.
Thank you, and I would like to share my personal opinion too of how important that animal liberation is in the practice of authentic veganism. And the Abolition Amendment here in the United States, the Abolition Amendment, I think, is essential. That I believe in the boomerang effect. And so I think of veganism as two aspects. One is the golden rule, and that's what it is, practicing the golden rule. And then two, the boomerang effect of whether you think of it in terms of frequencies, quantum vibrations, reflective vibrations, or in the more spiritual sense, that a slogan of as we sow, so will we reap, or as you sow, so will you eventually and inevitably reap. And so I see this, that if we don't achieve animal liberation, then the crimes against humanity are going to continue on and on. And I see it getting worse. I mean, we're entering this whole new era of digital control and mass surveillance and exploitation of our personal data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on and on, as well as all the wars and the injustices. I mean, it's just so awful. It's so bad. I really believe that animal liberation is absolutely necessary if we are ever going to achieve a human society based on peace and justice and safety and truly liberation and freedom. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, it comports with theories from a lot of different thinkers through the years. I mean, what you were just saying reminded me of the great quote from Leo Tolstoy about, you know, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. And I think that humans just don't realize that there really is that disconnect between the values that they think they hold and then the practices that they engage in. And when they do have that disconnect, they wind up setting up these conditions and kind of normalizing these conditions that wind up reflecting back on themselves. And so I do think that there is an as you sow, so shall you reap type phenomenon happening there. And you really can't make it, you don't sound credible in a sense, arguing against exploitation, arguing in favor of human rights and so on, if you're not willing to yourself avoid exploitation and avoid granting rights to others.
We're listening to Shelley Harrison, a law teacher and inventor and the primary author and editor of The Abolition Amendment. You tune into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Shelley Harrison. We're listening to the music of Will Tuttle from his album, Animal Songs. Much thanks for tuning in. Welcome back from the break. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlena, Massachusetts. We're joined by Shelley Harrison. We're continuing our conversation about rights, human rights, and animal rights, and liberation, personal sovereignty, bodily autonomy, and freedom. We're celebrating World Vegan Day, which is November 1st every year, and that kicks off World Vegan Month. And we're relating this to the women's rights movement in the USA and one of the primary conventions that really solidified the rights for women was the Seneca Falls Convention in New York. Let's hear about it from Shelley Harrison. Thank you, Shelley. Please tell us about the Seneca Falls Convention itself.
Well, so the Seneca Falls Convention itself happened in 1848 in Seneca Falls, New York. That's in upstate New York. And just as a little personal aside, they have a national park. The building where the Seneca Falls Convention was held is still there. You can go see it. And it has been made into a national park. I think it's called the Women's Rights National Park. There in Seneca Falls, there's a sort of monument next to that building that is a fountain on which the Declaration of Sentiments, which was the document that the Seneca Falls Convention ultimately produced, that is inscribed into this wall. So there's kind of water running over the wall, and there's a little kind of park there. And it's just a wonderful place to visit. It's very inspiring, I think, to go there. And if you do go there, you're within range of a whole bunch of other important history in this sort of abolitionist and equal rights country of upstate New York. So for instance, Seneca Falls, Rochester, New York is where Susan B. Anthony's home is, and Frederick Douglass set up the North Star publication there. Buffalo, which is where the Liberty Party had its original meetings. Niagara Falls, where there's now a monument or a museum to the Underground Railroad, for instance. And then, Auburn, I believe, is out where Harriet Tubman's home is now and where William Seward is buried. So you can, within just the course of a few days, you can run around to all those different cities I mentioned and have a really deep and inspiring kind of firsthand experience, to the degree that we can, of kind of meeting. We can't meet those individuals anymore because obviously they've passed away, but you can kind of go into the space that these early abolitionists and early equal rights activists were in when they were doing this monumental work. So Seneca Falls is part of that kind of area. A number of leaders, such as Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who were both active in the abolitionist movement at that time, what we now call the proto-abolitionist movement, because it's for the freeing, the ending of human slavery as opposed to the ending of all slavery. We now use that term abolitionist to refer to the ending of all slavery. So animal rights people in particular, we'll just call it abolitionist. But this time, the proto-abolitionists were also equal rights activists. So those two communities had a great deal of overlap during this time. And so they, Lucretia Mott, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and their friends and so on, assembled this group in Seneca Falls. And over the course of a few days of working together, they produced this document called the Declaration of Sentiments, which deliberately echoes the Declaration of Independence. It starts off with that same language of when in the course of human events, that type thing. So they're quoting and deliberately kind of making a parallel here in 1848 to the kind of revolution delayed, if you will, of the 1770s there. So they're recognizing this is truly, obviously, this is a new generation of human beings because that revolutionary generation had passed away by 1848. But by the time we get to the Declaration of Sentiments, it is certainly something that has become much more crystallized into what we would recognize now as truly an equal rights movement. So it's an extraordinary document in that way.
I'd like to read some excerpts of the Declaration of Sentiments. And again, this was for the Seneca Falls Convention that these women and men met to declare rights for women. And so it's great to hear about the National Historic Park in New York, upstate New York, for women's rights. And I'm happy to hear that you visited it and giving all those details to our listeners, so thank you. So here's some of the excerpts of Declaration of Sentiments, and this is from 1848. Quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." So here I'd like to continue with some of the excerpts of this Declaration of Sentiments from the Seneca Falls Convention in New York, 1848. I would call this their grievances, this part. Quote, referring to the history of mankind in the government of a patriarchal government. Quote, "He has never," where they mention her, of course, mentioning to all women, quote, "He has never permitted her to exercise her inalienable right to the elective franchise. He has compelled her to submit to laws in the formation of which she had no voice. He has taken from her all right in property, even to the wages she earns. In the covenant of marriage, she is compelled to promise obedience to her husband, he becoming, to all intents and purposes, her master, the law giving him power to deprive her of her liberty and to administer chastisement. He closes against her all the avenues to wealth and distinction which he considers most honorable to himself. As a teacher of theology, medicine, or law, she is not known. He has denied her the facilities for obtaining a thorough education, all colleges being closed against her. He has endeavored in every way that he could to destroy her confidence in her own powers, to lessen her self-respect, and to make her willing to lead a dependent and abject life." End quote. Those were just a few of the excerpts from the Declaration of Sentiments.
Here's a snippet of a song by Shelley Harrison, 1993. It's a snippet of the song, Old Man River. Quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident. All people are heaven-sent. One day we'll leave this hypocrisy in the past and sing, Thank God Almighty, we're free at last." End quote. This verse references the Declaration of Independence and Declaration of Sentiments, and then references the famous Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech, Free at Last, which in turn references the famous African-American hymn, Free at Last. The original song, Old Man River, relates to the struggles of African Americans to the flowing of the Mississippi River. Hey, Old Man River. They say it's getting better. They say it's getting better. Thank you, Shelley. We're coming to a close in the interview for today. What additional messages can you share with our listeners?
The theme that you and I have kind of gotten to touch on today is just that of the commonality between these ideas. The people who were working on women's rights early and throughout its history recognized that they were not working in a vacuum, that in order to gain rights, one has to go ahead and put into practice the very things that you yourself are asking for, and also just provide a certain inspiration that lets you know that when the times are difficult, that these great people who did eventually pull it off, they went through similar difficult times. So that's at least one big takeaway that I would have from the things we've been talking about there. They were working not only for women's rights, but also for the ending of human slavery and race-based discrimination and so on. And so I think that at least that commonality of what we're up against, I think, is very pertinent to where the culture still is today.
Thank you, Shelley, and thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene. It's just a pleasure to get to talk to you today, and I hope that your fall is off to a great start.
Thank you.
Much thanks to our listeners tuning into Vegan Nation. Much thanks to Shelley Harrison for joining us for this interview. And to the vegan musicians, a big thank you also. Please join us again next week. At the same time, you can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. This is Marlene in Massachusetts, wishing you a lovely, peaceful, joyous day.